No, really? Is there time to change this? That show. I mean, first they say that Mr. Shu doesn't know anything about choreography. And then, like, three episodes later, he's this fantastic choreographer. Pick a lane, people. And what was with Jesse's sudden turn on Rachel between Dreamon and Funk? Where the heck did that come from? Honestly, that show, it's just, it's irresponsible.
Good afternoon, Jennifer.
Good afternoon, Ed.
Good afternoon, Josh.
Welcome to the Gleeful Podcast with Josh, Jen, and Ed. We are back on this very eponymous day. Jennifer, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
So welcome to the Gleeful Podcast. We're back to discuss the latest episode of Glee entitled The Substitute.
The Substitute.
Not the movie with Treat Williams, but The Substitute. Remember that movie from the 90s? And then they made a bunch of sequels. No, they made it was originally with Tom Berenger, and then the sequels had Treat Williams. Yes, that was a bad series of movies, all entitled The Substitute. Do not look them up. But this is The Substitute with Gwyneth Paltrow playing Holly Holiday, neither a stripper nor
a drag queen. Drag star.
Yes. Oh. Very close. And we started off there with Forget You. Which originally was recorded by CeeLo Green with a title that we really aren't supposed to say on the show.
So I prefer the edited version anyways. People are too obsessed with cursing in general. I love this song so much. So much.
It is so infectious.
It's very catchy.
It's such a fun, fun song. And
yeah.
I was frankly surprised that you heard of it, Josh.
Me?
They are playing it on the radio. So
well, they do play it on the radio, but it's also... I've heard it for a couple reasons, but mainly because it's actually good. So I hear the things that are actually good.
Oh, you did not go there. Okay, continue.
There you go. I haven't heard anything off of Katy Perry's new record, but I've heard this. I have this record. This is good.
You can't avoid it. You've heard it.
I hate it.
So you lie.
No, of course I've heard it. I haven't heard the record. I've heard California Girls and I've heard Teenage Dream, which are pretty much the same song, let's be honest.
So, this week's Glee.
Oh, I love Glee. What's going on with that?
Yeah, we should talk about Glee. So, a couple emails about our last show before we dive in. Many listeners emailed in to say that the singers on Teenage Dream behind Darren Criss in the last episode were the Beelzebubs from Tufts University. They came in second on the sing-off. So awesome.
Very cool.
Love those guys.
From Somerville, Massachusetts.
Yes, I did know that Tufts was from. See, you're crossing me up there on my
sorry.
My logic statements. But yes, so congratulations. That was very, very exciting to see the Beelzebubs. Also, speaking of the sing-off, it returns, I believe, in December.
You mean it wasn't canceled?
No, it's what? Coming back. But I did look, and apparently it's a five-night return of the sing-off. I'm going to look up when it's coming back.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember it only being five or six episodes, and it finished when we were in New England last year at Christmas, so it probably starts right after Thanksgiving.
Yes, it starts on December 6th. That's right.
Okay, that's a little further after Thanksgiving, but yeah.
So yeah, season premiere Monday, December 6th. I believe it's a five-episode event, and it was, as far as I can tell, all recorded in August. So that's hilarious.
That's convenient because that's when Glee is over for their Christmas break.
Oh, that is convenient.
That also kind of fills the gap.
So, yes, I tried to get tickets, and it was all in August. So, very exciting. And you can go ahead and check out the Glee Christmas record. We have not heard it because Jennifer and I will wait for the show, but I'm sure Ed has heard it. Ed, have you heard the Glee Christmas record?
Actually, I haven't. I only like Christmas songs in the summer, so...
Wait, what?
You can figure that one
it's
out.
November.
On your own time. everyone's singing Christmas songs now. It says it's not special now.
It's always special, Ed.
That's
but in the,
always.
But in the summer, people will give you weird looks, and I guess, appreciate that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm guilty of listening to Christmas music pretty much any time of the year. Just when I feel like it.
Wow. That's so weird.
I know, but you knew that before you asked me to marry you, so...
I know. Oh, I bought in.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not going to change the weird.
Now I get to listen to it in public. That's the key.
That's the difference, yes. Before you just listen to it on the headphones. Well, there you go. So Christmas music, that's exciting. So looking forward to that. You can check that out online. And Mark Salling released his new CD entitled Pipe Dreams. Listener Caitlin said that he wrote on his Twitter telling people that the first 200 people to pre-order his CD got an autograph, and her friend was one of those people, and she loves it and is framing it. So congratulations to Caitlin's friend.
Wow.
Very exciting. And I would think that if you're hearing this now, you are too late. So I wouldn't run out right this second, damn, unless you like Mark Salling that much.
You know what he could do to make those record sales good? Say the first 1 million people that pre-ordered. Then you have a platinum record.
Well, I don't think he's going to sell 1 million copies even if he autographs every one. I don't think that's possible.
Hurry now. Going fast.
Maybe, I mean, no, he would actually. He would sell 1 million copies because before he can autograph it, he has to buy it himself, open it, then autograph it. So
nice.
Technically, he would move 1 million copies in that way. I'm sure Kiss tried that in the 70s. I'm sure someone has already given that a whirl. So yes, lots of exciting stuff about going on in the Gleeverse. We'll have to get that Mark Salling record and give that a listen in the coming weeks. I did read the Glee book.
You did, and you left it on my side of the bed for me to read, and I haven't yet.
Yeah, I keep saying like, hey, as soon as Jennifer reads it, we'll discuss it.
But we'll send it out to you, Ed.
Yeah, maybe we'll send it to you and you can read it, Ed, because Jennifer's not moving on it very quickly. It takes like 30 minutes to read that book. There's 8 words in it. It's like,
really?
Yeah.
That's it. The Glee Club is awesome. Yeah. Very.
It's written in really big print.
Yes, very. It is written in really big print. You know, I had a love-hate relationship with the Glee book. It is not good. It's not particularly enjoyable. It tries to kind of create
way a to sell it. Way to sell. Yeah.
Well, and it tries to create a backstory for the characters, which is fun. But then you're a little torn because you don't know if this is like a canon backstory, like this is a backstory that you're allowed to trust, or if it's just something that, you know, exists within the reality of this 200 and however many pages. That said, if I was reading it when Glee was not on, I think it would be a nice kind of fun holdover. It's kind of fun to see the characters. Mr. Schuster isn't really around. You know, it's mainly just the kids kind of hanging out and being the kids together. So that's kind of fun. You know, I mean, you can get your Glee fix it from it if you need your Glee fix. And I think that's worthy, you know. So it has its place. But, you know, a great work of literature, I don't think anyone involved would make that claim. So, you know, nothing wrong with that. But, you know, maybe we'll talk about the Glee book a little bit more when Jennifer gets around to reading it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. gonna go pick it up right now.
Yes, in the middle of the show. By the time we finish the show, you could be done. I swear to God. It's very short, and you don't need to read every word. I promise.
Oh, so approach it like you would Twilight.
Yes, you only need... Well, no, actually, you can read Twilight faster. Because I read about 10 words per page on Twilight, and I can tell you everything that happened in that one.
I'm sorry, I'm not... I can't criticize a book I haven't read, so...
I can, because I have. anyway, I'm totally out. So Glee! We should talk about Glee! We started off with Forget You, which was the first song, or not the first song, but the first full song performed by Gwyneth Paltrow in this episode. Gwyneth Paltrow, the latest in the long run of giant guest stars to appear on Glee, and certainly not the last. I assume we're still going to get Javier Bardem this season. They talked so much about him.
They promised
before.
Me.
They pro- you personally?
They promised me personally.
Ryan Murphy sent you a letter.
He did.
What did we think of Gwyneth Paltrow as Holly Holiday? Jennifer?
So much fun. I thought she was a blast. Surprisingly good. I mean, I had seen her recently perform a country song. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, she can sing. But to see her get up and do this, it was just, it was really refreshing. It was just, I kept thinking how much fun this episode was.
Yes.
And I liked it.
I agree. So, I thought it was really fun. And she's very charming. I mean, she makes reasonably serious films, but she's really quite funny. And she was on The Marriage Ref last season and was like crazy funny, was surprisingly funny to everyone involved. Like the rest of the panel of The Marriage Ref was kind of freaking out at how quick she was. So yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I didn't particularly like the CMA thing, mainly because I thought she got a lot of credit for being a great country singer, but she's got like Vince Gill, one of the greatest country singers of all time, standing next to her. So it's like, you know, I think Heidi and Spencer would sound good standing next to him.
But
I really enjoyed her. I thought she was fantastic. Ed, Gwyneth Paltrow in this episode?
I thought that not only did she teach more Spanish in this episode than I've seen Will Schuster in the entire series.
That's true.
But that she's like, I was like, Sue loves her, I love her, the kids love her, even Rachel came around to love her. I was like, what's the problem? And then it all fell apart, but I was like, it didn't even fall apart. But then it was over, and I was sad.
Yeah, that was one complaint I had about this episode, is that the resolution to her character seemed kind of unsatisfying. They kind of, she doesn't take the job, but she's still kind of there. And I guess they kind of want to leave the door open so they can bring Gwyneth Paltrow back at any time if they want. And I'm totally down with that. But yeah, it seemed a little unsatisfying, her, the way
you know what I liked about her as opposed to Kristen Chenoweth guest star,
mm-hmm.
was that Gwyneth Paltrow felt like she brought, like, she wasn't becoming the star. She was helping the kids become the star. So, like, even though she had, like, three major songs that she did,
mm-hmm.
in all of them, I felt like she was a part of it and not the star of it. Unlike Kristen Chenoweth, so.
She does mesh well with the rest of the cast. I mean, I could totally see that character becoming a regular on the show, mm-hmm. more than, you know, an episode per season or two episodes per season of Randy Rhoads is that right? No.
April Rhoads
is about all I can take. When Kristen Chenoweth is in the episode, that's pretty much all the episode is about. You make a good point. When Gwyneth Paltrow's there, it did feel more kind of conducive, and it didn't feel like the entire episode was centered around her.
Felt like as a teacher, as a music teacher, she was or a Glee Club teacher, whatever. She was much more selfless than Mr. Schuster ever was, because Mr. Schuster is, to be frank, he's only doing this because he wants to relive his glory days. So that's kind of selfish. And Gwyneth Paltrow was just like, let's have fun and make it work. And it worked, and it was made.
Well, you know, it's funny because I agree with that to an extent, but I think also she was being kind of selfish because she wanted everybody to like her so much. She would do anything and let anybody do anything they wanted, which ultimately proved out not to be good for the kids. But I mean, it just seemed like it was almost a little, again, I loved her. I thought she was amazing. It was so much fun, but it almost came off a little desperate to me, that she was just overly eager to get their approval.
I agree. I mean, that's the dark side of her character, and they almost didn't. They almost didn't hit it hard enough. They kind of touched on this concept of like how she can't commit and how she, you know, is a bit too starved for approval, or she's a bit more starved for approval than willing to, you know, make hard choices if it's in the best interest of the kids. This episode was written by Ian Brennan, and his episodes do tend to be the more light, fluffy ones. They tend to have the better jokes and have the better plot lines, but they don't tend to have the big, like, Ryan Murphy endings, the big heart-wrenching endings. And that's kind of how I felt about this one. Like, I liked it up until the resolution, because you're right. I mean, her big failure as a person would be that she's so starved for approval that, like, you know, it's hilarious that she gives the test answers to Puck, but then at the end of the day, Puck doesn't learn anything. It's right. Like, I could see her as the president of the Glee Club, you know, they'd have a lot of fun and they'd get to do all the songs they want to do, but when they got to sectionals, it would be a bunch of songs that, like, they loved and the judges had no frame of reference with. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there needs to be kind of a place in the middle. And again, like the resolution at the end of the show is where Will and her perform, and everybody performs this mashup of Singing in the Rain and Umbrella, which is funny. But on the one hand, I feel like she kind of didn't learn anything from her experience, except that she continued to not be able to commit. And Will didn't really learn anything from his experience in that he did go to her and say, hey, I need your help to sell them on this song. But then he still kind of rammed the song down their throats in a different way.
Yeah, he still got his way.
So I didn't really feel like anybody learned anything.
Well, I don't think Halle Holiday was looking to, like, she's still hurt or broken or whatever she is.
Punched in the face by a girl.
This is what she wants. Like, she wants this transient lifestyle.
Yes.
And Will just wants power. Putting the Will Terry in Terrible. I miss Terry.
Whoa.
She was so good, and then he was so mean.
We had an article came up on TV.com today, which is why Gwyneth Paltrow should be the next Betty White. And kind of making this claim that, like, yeah, she's really more funny than anybody gives her credit for, and we're starting to get windows into that, but, you know, she needs that kind of groundswell of, like, internet support of people kind of going, like, hey, let's take a moment to recognize this person, because, you know, even they themselves don't seem to be taking the opportunity. I'm sure she's done comedies other than I can think of Shallow Hal, but that wasn't a very good
Duets. A comedy?
That was, see, and everybody's talking about Gwyneth Paltrow singing and how that's so groundbreaking. And oh my gosh, we didn't know Gwyneth Paltrow could sing. Did anyone see Duets?
No, nobody did.
Apparently not. I mean, she wasn't all that great.
She had a number one hit on United States Adult Contemporary in 2000 with Cruisin'.
Yeah, with Cruisin' from Duets. And so it's like we all knew she could sing already. I don't really understand the big, you know, this new revelation. I'm not against it, but it just seems a little hilarious that we're making such a big deal out of it now. I think we just, you know, we like to applaud pretty white women and go, like, you're so talented. So Jennifer saying no.
She was in Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. I never saw that movie. Always wanted to.
That's not a good movie. But it's really fun to watch. I enjoy it a lot. I have it on DVD. But it's not a good movie. It's really boring towards the end.
I fell asleep. Visually, oh. I mean, the special effects and the animation, I guess.
Yeah, it's one of the first movies that was, like, fully done on green screen.
It was beautiful, but it got boring and I fell asleep.
Well, before we move too far away from Halle Holiday and on to the other plots of the show, we'll go ahead and take a listen to... So what I was going to do there, we just had a little break in the show. What I was going to do there is I was going to play her version of Conjunction Junction that she performed in the show, but it's not on the soundtrack. There's no downloadable version of Gwyneth Paltrow performing.
It was only like, it was like the tiniest bit, although, I don't know, her outfits were fierce.
Her outfits were fierce. Well, it was. I thought it was worth downloading. I mean, there's a lot of Schoolhouse Rock fans. We got a listener who emailed in and said, you know, am I the only, or thank God somebody remembered Schoolhouse Rock.
I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
Huge fan.
You know all the
and
words.
She does dress very well for a substitute teacher.
Yeah, right? Where's that money coming from?
Well, she doesn't spend it on plates, and she doesn't spend it on her car.
She spends it on paper plates, yeah.
Well, you know, one of the funny things about Holly Holiday was how she ingratiated herself to everyone in the Glee Club and really in the school at large. We saw her kind of ingratiating herself into Sue.
Oh, my God.
The only thing better than hoarders is animal hoarders.
Animal hoarders.
I don't. Can someone unpack that comment for me? I don't entirely.
Well, Hoarders is a show on
the Learning Channel,
TLC. And there's another version. I think there's two versions of Hoarders on two different channels. But it's about hoarders, people that just have too much crap in their homes and have like
an intervention. A special organizer comes in and helps to pry all of the junk out of their house away from them, and it's this really distressing show.
Yeah, because it's kind of like no one's ever better at the end of the episode. Like, you take all their crap out of the house, but they're just kind of looking around going, look at all this place to bring in more crap.
And we're talking mounds and mounds and mounds of crap. There was this one woman that had like this whole back room that was filled with stuff, and they had to just shovel stuff out. And like 2 hours into shoveling, they uncover this teddy bear that's been matted and like just eaten by all sorts of things because it's been under all this trash. And she just picked it up and she's like, you can't throw this out. This is my favorite teddy bear. I'm like, how did it end up under trash if it's your favorite?
Yeah.
People are crazy.
Hoarders makes me clean. Like, I put that on and I'd start vacuuming.
I get itchy.
Then Animal Hoarders was a spinoff on TLC, which is about people that just, like, these people that have too many pets. You know, they have, like, 50 dogs or whatever. Yeah. And they think that without them, the dogs will die. And it's depressing to watch, which is kind of funny that they're getting so much joy from enjoying it or from watching it.
It's Sue.
It's Sue. So it was funny to see Holly kind of ingratiate herself to Sue by enjoying other people's pain. You know, with Puck, she gave him the answers to the test. And with Rachel, she let her perform any song she wanted. Rachel has a comment in this episode that I wanted to throw out there. When Holly says, you know, you never seem to get to do the songs you want to do, and Rachel says, well, you know, Mr. Schuster keeps a pretty tight grip on song selection. When has Mr. Schuster ever even known what the song selection was? These kids get up and perform anything at the drop of a hat. And it's like, Mr. Schuster's he doesn't know what they're going to perform. He gives them assignments, and then they come in with random songs. So that whole plot line is a little weird.
Okay. I don't know about always, but whenever it's... Okay, I think they're talking specifically about sectionals and regionals.
Yeah, I think more for performance rather than for...
the show. That's like for the show.
Exercises in the classroom. Yeah.
So we're talking... This is the difference between, like, exhibition performances in the classroom and then sectionals performances.
Competition performances, yes.
It was funny to get the scenes of Mr. Schuster just saying, hey, I found another Journey song we haven't done.
Oh, they're so funny.
That was good.
I just don't understand why, I don't even understand the point of the assignments. Like, yeah, they're fun, but then they don't end up using any of them ever.
The point of the assignments, Ed, is so that they can release 102 songs by the end of the season.
And it's so that we don't hear them rehearse the same song over and over again. But
like when I was in choir, we did the same 4 songs for, like, months.
Exactly. Well, you know, before we leave Ollie, since we don't have Conjunction Junction to listen to, we should definitely listen to Nowadays and the Hot Honey Rag from Chicago. And Jennifer, you were raising your eyebrows because that usually means I said something stupid.
In this case, no.
Okay, good. Here is Nowadays.
That's good, isn't it grand? Isn't it great? Isn't it swell? Isn't it fun? Isn't it? But nothing stays in 50 years or so.
time was kind of short. So,
well, it was more dancing in this.
So in this episode, we got something that I think everyone was dreaming about, particularly Ed, Principal Sue Sylvester.
Wow.
Edward, how did we feel about Principal Sue?
I thought she was fantastic. I was like, she had to learn, figure out a way to stay in power. And she's teaching me some really good tips for taking over the world, which I intend to do soon. So it's probably best that she teaches me more soon. So I just think it's funny that they gave, that all they had was like pre-digested food or something.
Yes.
Whatever Mercedes said.
Yeah.
Oh, side note. You know what confused me?
Go on.
Rachel was like, I just want to do a song that's fabulous, has a nice dance beat, and whatever. And then she came out doing Nowadays Hot Honey Rag, and I was somewhat surprised. I was like, what? Really? Like, this song? This wasn't the song I was thinking. I don't know what I was thinking, but I wasn't thinking that song.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely not what I would have selected, given that description. But Principal Sue, I do like that the first thing Principal Sue did with her power was to try to cancel the football team. To which Beast said, of course, who would you root for, or who would you cheer for, which is kind of genius. Then she went ahead and fired Will. Now, I had a problem with Sue firing Will because, you know, yeah, it's funny and it's a bit cliche because it's like, of course, that's the first thing that a Principal Sue would do. But we all knew Will was going to get his job back by the end of the episode. Was there any question? Because
no, there was I was hoping for Holly Holiday to stay, frankly.
Well, but we knew she wouldn't because it's Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, she can't come back next week,
too.
I was
hoping you could hope against hope.
I mean, if we had finished the episode and Will hadn't gotten his job back, that would have been crazy. Like, that would have been, like, light up the sky, Glee's going out on a limb. So it just seemed kind of like a waste of plot when he got fired to go that direction and then just give him his job back at the end. Jennifer, did you feel that way at all?
Honestly, it was... I thought it was as long lasting as Sue's presidency. Now she's got me thinking that she is president.
That was awesome.
As Sue's appointment.
And her idol principal. Is Richard Nixon.
I know. Honestly, stuff like that, I just take it with a grain of salt right now. I mean, it's kind of like with the, you know, the sets and the costumes for the, you know, the Glee performances. It's just sort of like, it's one of those things. I don't think it's ever really anything that you, if you look too closely at it, you'd punch too many holes in it. And mm-hmm. I didn't think it was long lasting. I wasn't surprised when it was resolved so quickly.
Yeah, I don't know. It just felt like, as I'm watching this plot line, it's hard for me to really get invested in it because I know he's just going to get his job back eventually. Ed, how did you feel about it?
Well, I mean, I guess there was something that we learned that Sue can't be... Sue has to have a bit of a fight. I suppose there's some character development because she needs to have some sort of fight, otherwise it's just too easy for her. So, I don't know. Is Will her fight? I don't know.
Interesting point.
Well, I mean, I did like at the beginning, before he even got sick, how he said, but Sue, I thought we were friends. She goes, nah, that got boring.
And I'm like, true story. You know, true story.
That's awesome. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
Like,
Sue needs an enemy to be powerful.
And again, at the end of the day, Sue really does care about the kids. I mean, it's like, yeah, she took away the tater tots to... you know, piss him off and to just show that she's the leader now. But at the end of the day, you know, providing a healthier lunch option isn't, you know, that bad a thing. And, you know, I mean, ultimately, of course they had to bring Will back. But I think she even recognized that somebody like Holly was a little too irresponsible for the care and well-being of the kids. So.
Well, and you bring up, you know, the next big point is the tots. I was really torn over this tots episode because I watched Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution, and you know, it's well documented, you know, the discussion of nutrition in our elementary and middle and high schools. So, you know, this is a real debate, this whole TOTS thing. And I guess for a show that has, in the last couple weeks, taken on, you know, bullying and religion and all these really heavy issues, and then to take on or kind
school
of
nutrition
to, touch their toes into the topic of school nutrition, but in an entirely joking way, it seemed almost out of character for them. That was a little odd to me that they went that direction. I don't know, how did you guys feel about the TOTS, Ed?
Sue saw it as just an ends to a means, and it's a real problem. Yeah, I don't know. I wish there were more better options. I'm just like stumbling over words. So I guess I don't really have any other thoughts about that.
Jennifer.
Well, I mean, I was a little torn in that her initial motivation for taking them away again was to punish the students.
Yeah.
I thought it wasn't to punish the students. I thought it was so she could keep her power. Like, she needed a cause.
She needed something. So that was part of it. And then, you know, then by instilling, you know, a healthier lunch, you know, she was doing something for the kids. So I don't know. It's one of those things that I don't delve that deeply into. I didn't think they were trying to make too much of a statement of, you know, childhood weight issues across the country. Maybe they were. I don't know.
I don't think they actually were. But I think it was just they just knew it was a hot button topic, and they kind of like smoothed over it.
Yeah, and they did a really nice job of kind of identifying, you know, Mercedes kind of using that as a replacement for, you know, relationships.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's where she sought comfort, as opposed to taking a chance and either meeting other friends or seeking out a relationship with somebody that she liked.
And it gave Mercedes the opportunity to have a big Norma Rae moment and alienate any viewer under the age of 20.
25, 30. Ed, did you even get that reference? When she stood on the chair with the sign TOTS?
I knew that was something, but I didn't know what it was.
A reference of some kind.
A Sally Field movie called Norma Rae. She created a union in her workplace and caused a lot of trouble. So it's going to be, what, 35 years old now?
At least. It's been around for ages. And she won an Academy Award for the role.
Didn't she?
Isn't
probably
that the one she went for?
She won
two. You know what I thought was a PSA?
What?
You know how they've been doing those commercials with the Glee kids?
Yes.
With don't be a Sue, be a...
Yes.
Be nice.
Do-gooder, yeah.
Do-good. So, when they started the sequence of Will Schuster and Mike Chang doing Make Him Laugh.
Yes.
When that started, I was like, is this one of those commercials? And then it just kept going, and then there wasn't, like, a moral point at the end. So I was like,
It's an interesting point. Let's go ahead and take a listen to Make Him Laugh before we talk a little bit more about Will. This was his number, kind of his dream sequence in the episode.
Yeah.
So here's a bit of that.
Short people have long faces, and long people have short faces. Big people have little humor, and little people have no humor at all. And in the words of that immortal god, Samuel J. Snodgrass, as he was about to be led to the guillotine, make him laugh, make him laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? Ha ha! My dad said be an actor, my son. But be a comical one, they'll be standing in lines for those old honky-tonk monkey shines. Now you can study Shakespeare and be quite elite, and you can charm the critics and have nothing to eat. Just slip on a banana peel, the world's at your feet. Make them laugh, make them laugh, make them laugh. Make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My grandpa said, go out.
I also wonder how many viewers watched this and didn't think, oh, they're doing the Joseph Gordon-Levitt thing from SNL. Obviously this is from Singing in the Rain. It was a fun number. It was a number that didn't really have any bearing on the rest of the plot, though. And those tend to be a bit time fillery.
Yeah, and the fact that they did it scene for scene from the original movie was a little... I was surprised. I thought they might have changed it up a little bit. But it was fun.
Well, it was
with
two people.
But they... that's right. That is true. Yeah. But still, some of the moves were just identical.
Yeah, the structure of it was definitely just like the original film, and that was fun, you know, a cool homage. But you're right, it was a little odd. It didn't really add anything to the episode. You could kind of cut it, and you wouldn't really miss it that much. It didn't make for, three songs in this episode from musical theater, which is a little high? Oh, no, that's Conjunction Junction is not from musical theater.
No, but Chicago, this, and Singing in the Rain.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So, yes, that's kind of a lot for an episode. So we had Will in this episode and the return of Terry. Ed, tell me a little bit about Terry.
The terror in Terry.
Yeah, she was just trying to take advantage of Will while he was weak, as any strong woman should. So, no, I'm just kidding. Or am I? I don't know. I don't really know. I honestly thought that after the post-Emma drama that Will and Terry could have, like, grown back together. And I thought this disease was the gateway to it. But apparently not. And I was kind of disappointed when it wasn't.
It definitely teased that. But I don't know. The main thing that came out of Will and Terry for me in this episode was the continuing... degradation of Will's character. Like, they're really gonna have to have an episode that just totally recoups Will as a human being, because over the course of this season he's become a worse and worse person, and it's become harder and harder to be a fan of his with the actions that he's committed. It's like last season, you know, we had a big moment of Will being like, I'm taking control of my life and I'm growing up, and he had a couple pitfalls along the way, but this season it's just been stumble after stumble after creepy. And I don't know, I'm not happy with Will after this one, especially when he's talking baby talk with Terry. Now, there is no excuse at any time for baby talk, okay?
Unless we all do it. To a baby.
It's a little, yeah, well, even then, I'm not a big fan. But touche. At least you can't be faulted. Weird when you're talking baby talk to your ex-wife. Straight up creepy. So that was odd. I don't know. I wasn't happy with Will. Jennifer, Will and Perry?
Yeah, I was disappointed that he was falling for her manipulative ways, although I thought it was pretty funny when he called her out and she's like, you know, she said something and he's like, well, you do like me when I'm weak, or you do like when I'm, yeah, incapacitated. I don't know what he said, but it was really kind of hard to watch. I mean, first of all, I mean, it's one thing, I suppose, for him to give in to her nursing him, but then to, you know, give in to the loving, it was he's not, redeeming himself in any way, shape, or form at this point.
And then he got fired, went to the school, and whined about it to Holly Holiday.
And it's had not a big, her fault.
Yeah, unnecessary confrontation.
Well.
And, I mean... yeah, it just felt very petty. His entire behavior through all of that seemed oddly petty. And then she came to him, and I guess that was kind of cute, but it was weird.
She heard he had good beer. You know? Or expensive beer. Yeah, it just... Something needs to happen to him. He needs to kind of just shake all this crap off. Like, yeah, he had a bad year last year, and, you know, things fell apart with his wife, and then things didn't work out with Emma, but... he needs to pick himself up and be a man again.
Yeah, it would be nice. It would be nice to see Will kind of grow up. He showed good signs, showed some good progress, but I'm kind of disappointed with him. Ed, any opinions on Will?
It's the same as always. Will is half as interesting without Terry and a quarter as, I don't know. I had some crazy phrase that was great. But yeah, I could care less. And Terry was the most exciting part about him. And then like my mind toyed with the idea of him getting with Holly Holiday, like despite the obvious because of Gwyneth Paltrow it not being so. I was like, well, maybe they would be functional. I don't know. I don't know what Will needs. Will needs something.
We need a moment. You know, mm-hmm.
Will can't have a strong woman like Terry or the vocal adrenaline coast, or he can't have a weak woman like Emma. So like, what does he want?
Well, that's why I'm still convinced he needs a weekend alone with the box of wine and some romantic comedies or musicals, box of tissues, just cry it out. And, you know, once he can be with himself, he can find an equal and then be with them.
That seems what he needs. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe he was better when he was when he was being controlled. Some people just need to not be in control. Some people just need to be told what to do to be happy.
Maybe one direction. I don't know.
Something like that. Let's go ahead and take a listen to the final song of the episode. I guess this was as much growth as we were going to get from Will in this episode. The mashup of Singing in the Rain and Umbrella featuring Gwyneth Paltrow. And here's a bit of that. You have my heart, and we'll never be worlds apart. Maybe in magazines, but you'll still be my star. Baby, cause in the dark, you can't see shiny cars. And that's when you'll need me there. With you, I'll always share. Cause I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious on the scale of Glee mashups, this wasn't bad. I don't know. I kind of dug it. It felt a little shoved together, but I'm down. Jennifer, how did you feel about this one?
Yeah, I mean, thematically, it seems like it went together more than song-wise, but but it was just such a fun scene to watch.
Yeah,
with the water and the umbrellas and the dancing and everything.
It was a really cool dance number.
Yeah.
On the scale of dance numbers, I thought it was one of the better ones they've done in a little while.
Yeah.
Ed, how did we... Oh, I'm sorry, Jennifer.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I don't understand why Will and Holly have to be in every song with the kids, though, because isn't this the Glee Club? Like, they're the ones who are performing in sectionals, so...
That's... Yeah, it was more their number. I mean, they did all the singing, too.
Yeah. So that was my only complaint, because they already had numbers featuring them in the show. So yeah. I was kind of disappointed there wasn't one with just the kids. But whatever. It was still great.
Ed, how did you... what did you think of Singing in the Rain?
When I knew it was an Umbrella mashup, I was excited. And then it happened, and then it wasn't as exciting. I honestly thought Forget You was a stronger, like, it was probably the strongest performance this season, or this episode. I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was fun. The dancing was fun. But it was completely unrealistic. They're putting on these lavish numbers. I'm so critical right now. They're putting on these lavish numbers for something that isn't even practical for sectionals. It's not practical to have water on the ground. So, I mean, it was sweet, and I would like it to be that way for me most of the time when I'm doing that song. I do. I have been known to sing Umbrella quite a lot in my days. So I don't know. I mean, it was good for the show, but I'm starting to wonder what the point of all these performances are.
I think they're just to entertain us. I mean,
just, okay. I guess you're right. I should see past this. Okay, they're just to entertain us. But I feel like by now, at this point in the season, we had an idea of the sectionals playlist. Even though they didn't use it, we had an idea. We knew they were going to do Proud Mary in wheelchairs. We knew they were going to do True Colors. We had an idea of what they were going to do.
Yeah.
But at this point of the season, I have, frankly, no idea.
That's a good point.
It's true. And you know what? And I can't imagine that what they would do at sectionals could even be half as elaborate as what they're doing in their own auditorium.
That's also a good point.
So it would be interesting. And also last year, trying to think of getting regionals and sectionals confused, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. Maybe it's just a big surprise for us.
Yeah, well, it'll be a trip. We also had Kurt and Mercedes in this episode, and Kurt's burgeoning friendship with Blaine. There's not that much to say about it, except that they were very friendly.
Very
together.
Happy.
Yeah, happy.
Kurt's giddy.
I think the only thing I took away from that plot line is I've had enough Kurt for a while. I feel like every single episode there's more time spent with Kurt than any other character on this show right now. And I'm kind of ready to see some other characters a little bit. It's always, Kurt and then an Artie and Puck plotline. And Kurt and a Finn and Rachel plotline. And that's cool, but, like, Kurt isn't the only character on this show.
There's nothing going on with
anybody.
You know what they
should
do?
Well, that's because we've spent so much time with Kurt.
we need to bring Sunshine back. Or we need to know what's happening. We need to invade a camp local adrenaline with guns and laser beams and see how that goes.
Well, we'll definitely have to see. That would be funny. That's pretty much all I've got for this episode, guys. Did we cover it all?
Oh,
I'm sure listeners will think of things we didn't, but
so it was such a fun episode, really upbeat and, really fun music, fun numbers. But then for them to end with Karofsky threatening to kill Kurt and Kurt just standing in the hallway looking terrified, that was just really kind of depressing.
Yeah, seriously. Karofsky is getting creepy.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how that develops as well. The whole I'm going to kill you thing. Obviously, this means we're going to get lots more Kurt. But intense moment.
I know we touched on this last week, but I really think they're setting up to make Glee the after school specials of the future.
Well, I don't think they're setting it up. I think they're already there.
They're there. They're just like, those have you watched the entire seasons of Glee, for sexual education and all the other education,
recycling, anti-bullying, healthy eating.
Brittany needs to have a good driving lesson, and then we're like set to go.
Well, yeah, but they're kind of back to school specials for like a new generation, because there's not going to be an episode about getting your first period, but there will be one about your first pregnancy. So there's that.
Good point.
So if you'd like to weigh in on anything we discussed in this episode, you can email us at gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. You can check out the website, which is www.gleeful.com, gleefulpodcast.com. And there's also the Facebook fan page where you can weigh in there. And Ed, would you like to thank any iTunes reviewers this week?
Sure. Stretch4, Nicole LaRose, Justin Ho, Non-Athlete, Shame on You, EA, BW2, Xana Banana, thank you much for reviewing us. We are now officially up to 26 pages of reviews.
Wow. Woo-hoo. That's awesome.
Thank you.
And thanks to everybody who emailed. It's been fun chatting with you all, and will continue to be fun chatting with you all. The art contest on the Facebook fan page, we're going to go ahead and wrap that up at the end of the week. So if you'd like to enter the art contest, post some form of Gleeful inspired artwork that you created to the Facebook fan page. And we will be picking a winner at the end of this week. So Friday is your last time to enter that. So dive in there. And that is about it. I'm sure I'm forgetting. Oh, we opened up with a clip from The Office this week. This last week, The Office had an episode where they had a Glee viewing party. There was a lot of fun. So if you haven't seen that, it's on Hulu. You can check it out. It's a lot of fun. For the Gleeful Podcast with Josh Jen, and I'm Josh.
I'm Jen.
Putting the ad in perfection. Peace out.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
falls in love with you, yeah. She's a gold digger, just thought you should know.